Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. And now, on to the show.
So just to kick us off and have us all give everyone a feel of who's on our panel, what their backgrounds are and experience and the expertise that you're bringing, I'd like to have everyone introduce themselves to start. Ron, do you want to go first?
Sure. Hello, everyone. My name is Ron Zazadinsky, and I started Code Geek in 2002, 23 years ago. We are based in Fort Collins, Colorado. As the leader of Code Geek's team of 12 amazing people, I help the team be the best we can be every day. And we focus on relationships first, both with our clients and internally, as we build accessible websites for clients with regional, national, and global reach. So our primary services are web accessibility services, custom design. We build complex websites in WordPress, simple websites in Webflow, and we build web applications in PHP with the Laravel framework. So we have 12 teammates. They're all employees. We do work with contractors and some outside organizations for specific projects and certain skill sets. I know we were asked to give kind of the range, price range of websites that we work in. So our typical WordPress builds are anywhere from 25 to 80K. And we've built projects for around double that range as well. And we work with clients in a really wide variety of range of industries and sizes, from small to very large. So we work with clients that do have global operations. And we've recently been specializing in transportation websites, including two of the larger transportation agencies in Colorado, as well as businesses in the tourism industry.
Thank you. Jen, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I even made notes. Hi, I'm Jen Harries from the Easy Alley Guide, and we focus on helping freelancers and agencies with their accessibility. We focus more on the smaller end. Our packages typically start in the a very base build, which is our one-day build, is 1,000, and we typically work up to somewhere between 10,000 all the way up to about 50,000 for the higher-end builds. It is myself and several contractors. We have a few different programs for agencies. We have Done With You and we have Done For You. So we have our Accessibility Partner Program, which is more of our white label Done For You. And then we have our Agency Accessibility System, which is more for agencies who want to start implementing it and bringing it in-house. Work primarily in WordPress with a little bit of Shopify. And most of the work is going to be brochure sites with a bit of work in e-commerce.
Wonderful. Thank you. And Scott, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Scott Tobin and my company Sector 45. We've been around for about 14 and a half years now. And we are a medical marketing agency in that we work probably 99% with plastic and cosmetic surgeons, medical spas across the country. And we've got a handful of other medical clients, but we're almost 100% medical. And it's been an interesting niche for us. And we're a full service agency. We do, you know, website design and development and, you know, all the things to get you ranked in Google, obviously accessibility, you know, hosting, email marketing, text message marketing, anything related to their digital marketing success. Our prices range in between probably, I would say, 10,000 on the low side up to maybe 30,000 for a larger site. And we tend to build accessibility right into what we're doing from the get-go, unless we get a company that, you know, they don't need a brand new site and they've already got something, then we'll quote out what it will take to make their site accessible. It's just my business partner and I as the employees, and we have contractors all around the world that work for us. And we've been all working from our home space since day one. So it's been a nice fit.
Great. Thank you. Well, I'm so excited to have you all here because I feel like you present a really broad range of what different agencies or dev experiences can be like. And, you know, working with any clients to working with agencies to working in a very specific niche. And so I'm really excited to hear what you all have to bring. I do want to start on that point of, do you include accessibility by default, or is it an add-on? That kind of question. And Scott, maybe since you started there saying that it is something that you do and just by default in all of your builds, could you tell us a little bit more about that? Can you start there?
Sure. For us, we decided about 3 or 4 years ago because there wasn't anything that came out that said everyone has to do this. I mean, you saw the big box stores getting sued and settling for millions of dollars, but there wasn't, there were still two sides of the story of saying, well, you should do it. Well, you don't have to yet, so why should we? We decided as an agency we were going to just recommend that all of our clients do it. And then for new builds, we basically include that as part of what we're doing. And then the ongoing kind of upkeep or the scanning on a monthly basis, we build into their marketing plan. So it's just a part of their plan when they sign up with us. If it's a new or if it's a client where they don't need a new website, we have it as an offer, as an option. So we strongly recommend you do it. You don't have to do it. So if budget is a big factor, that might be something they pull out, but we don't recommend it. But we don't tell them you absolutely have to do it. So, and it's worked really well. I think that for us, it's a little easier because we're dealing with doctors, and doctors are already used to paying for malpractice and things like that. And the thought of being sued, they just say, do it. So it's kind of an easy sell for us. And we don't spend a lot of time trying. I mean, we aren't a hard sell agency in the first place, but it's never really a hard sell for us to do. When we explain what it is and walk through why we think they need it, no one says, nah, don't want it.
What about you, Jen? What has been your experience with how you package accessibility? All at once or add on?
Yes. So typically, the point that it comes for packaging is what level of accessibility does someone want? So at the base point, we start with you'll pass the lightning audit, which is a 7-point simple audit, which catches a lot of kind of the big blockers. And you'll get a clean score on the ACTS test. So that's the DQ test from ACTS. DQ is the company, and ACTS is the browser extension that does the test. So we get a zero there, which is a nice, simple, clean score, easy to explain to people. So that's where it starts. And then, depending on how much risk the company has, how much budget they have, we then start adding on more testing, more accessibility, a more thorough process, but there's always that baseline. So we don't drop below the baseline.
So the baseline is sort of like more of the automated score, looking at things like empty
Automated plus
buttons, empty
lightning, yeah.
links. Yeah.
Yeah, so we're making sure that things actually work with the keyboard and things actually work with color contrast and the kind of getting some of the baseline in there so that it's not going to be a dumpster fire. It's going to have, it's going to be decently usable for people out of the box. It may not be great, but it's going to really put you in a very low likelihood of having a lawsuit. And if someone does come to you saying, hey, I have a problem, it's probably going to be a small problem that's not going to be a big deal to fix. And then in terms of phrasing it and how I talk to people about it, I like to start by asking them, who are your customers? Are they moms who have kids? Are they commuters who are on trains and changing light conditions and ambient noise and they can't play videos with sound? And so I start by talking to them about who their actual people are that are using their website, who their customers are. If they've got a veteran base, half of veterans in the US have some form of disability. Who are their people? And then once we kind of dig into who their people are, I then bring accessibility in as the pathway so that their people can actually use the website.
Yeah, that's a really great way to look at it. So, Ron, how about you? Are you packaging it in on every website you build or not necessarily?
So we do include what I call baseline accessibility in every build. What we don't include in every build is WCAG conformance. So over time, we use our own custom theme, which is originally based on the Jace theme, which is a developer style theme, very clean and lean. And over many years, we have worked to make that more and more accessible. And our developers are all very, use accessible techniques on a regular basis. So if you think about the three areas where work needs to be applied, design, development, and content entry. So on the design, especially the development side, we're doing core things because it's built into our theme and our developers code that way anyway. But what we don't do is do all the testing that's required for WCAG compliance. So if a client does want that, then we add that on and we test at several different points in the process. So our developers test along the way in that case on their own using a command line interface tool. And then our in-house testers test when the core theme is completed, and then again test before launch. And we're doing, of course, automated testing, keyboard testing, and screen reader testing in those cases.
Are you, and maybe this is a question for all three of you, as a follow-up on this, the things that you are doing more as an add-on, has that typically been because of budget?
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalize Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. Thousands of businesses, nonprofits, universities, and government agencies around the world trust Accessibility Checker to help their teams find, fix, and prevent accessibility problems on an ongoing basis. New to accessibility? Equalize Digital Accessibility Checker is here to teach you every step of the way. Whether you're a content creator or a developer, our detailed documentation guides you through fixing accessibility issues. Never lose track of accessibility again with real-time scans each time you save, powerful reports inside the WordPress dashboard, and a front-end view to help you track down hard-to-find issues. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to Accessibility Checker Pro to scan your website in bulk, whether it has 10 pages or 10,000. Download Accessibility Checker today at equalizedigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code AccessibilityCraft to save 10% on any plan.
Yes. Typically, it's budget.
Yes, same here.
And I know everybody always wants to know pricing stuff, so we'll probably follow up on this a little bit, but I just wanted to clarify on that there. So I am curious though, are clients coming to you asking for accessibility, or are you introducing it to them? And if you are introducing it to them, how do you typically frame accessibility to clients? Are you talking about compliance, inclusivity, performance, SEO, something else? And I'm not sure if anybody wants to jump in on that one to start.
I know for us, I mean, we're including it in. So if we're doing a website redesign or a brand new site, we're including that in doing. So it doesn't actually really come up until they're reading our marketing plan, which is what happens after the site goes live and the monthly tactics we're doing. And then they're kind of looking at the line item because when they're looking at the initial proposal, they read the first page and they go straight to the price. They're not looking at all the details in between, but when they're looking at the marketing plan and what am I paying every month, that's where the questions start to come out. And that's where we start to explain what we're doing, why we're doing it. It's always an option. And it's never really, like I said, it's not really a hard sale for us. I don't have to spin it up or anything. I talk through it and everybody agrees and says, this is the right thing to do.
I'm curious on the doctor's side, have anybody said anything about like Affordable Care Act compliance? Because I feel like there's some stuff in the Affordable Care Act that suggests like effective communication, or are the doctors just not even thinking about that?
They're not even thinking about it. They're not even thinking about it. Occasionally, you'll get somebody that's, sending out letters to medical practices saying, I'm going to sue you if you're not compliant. And, we always recommend they talk to their own legal counsel, but give them recommendations as well. If it's not even in their state and they're suing into another state, it's like, this is probably not legitimate, but talk to your legal counsel. But other than that, it doesn't really come up.
What about you, Ron? Have you been seeing, are people asking for accessibility? And also, I don't know if you said this. Do you respond to RFPs, any of you?
We do, yeah, we do submit proposals in response to RFPs. There's a lot of the government work out there, whether it's, state, county, local, higher, often is getting issued through RFPs. So we do some of that for sure. So those are requiring it, right, when it's a government entity. For us personally, so I would say a very small minority of clients ask us about accessibility. It does happen, but it's not the main stream thing. So, but the majority of the time, we are introducing accessibility to our clients and our prospects. And the way I like to explain it, there's many different ways, of course, to think about and explain accessibility. So this is just one angle, and I think it's valuable to look at all the, many different angles to get the, a more complete picture of it. So this is just one way, but I like to build off of people's personal experience. So the short version is I'll ask them, ask a prospect, what type of laptop do you use, Mac or PC? What's your favorite browser on that? What type of phone do you use? What's your favorite browser on that? And if we built a website for them, we could just test on those devices and browsers and they would think everything's perfect. But they're trusting us to build on, test on all the other devices and browsers. And of course we do. And of course they understand that there are other people in the world who use other devices and other browsers. So that's easy, right? So what you may not understand, that they might not understand, is that people are also trying to navigate their website right now just using a keyboard. And there are people right now on their website trying to use their website with a screen reader. So then the question is, can those visitors do what they're trying to do? And can those visitors do what the business owner wants them to do? So that's the angle I take at it. And it because it builds on their personal experience, I think they get it very quickly that, oh, this is a really good thing too. I should be doing this.
And Jen, you sort of said you it's I'm guessing people come to you sometimes for accessibility because you have accessibility in the name and you've been putting yourself out there. But I'm curious if you could speak a little bit to what that transition was like maybe before you were doing that, when you had more of just your marketing agency or web design shop. I don't know the right way to describe it, so feel free to correct me when you answer. But like, how were you introducing people beyond, when you were talking about connecting them, trying to connect them personally with personas?
Yes, so I carry around my soapbox and I bring it around and I hop on top of it regularly, which I'm sure a number of people know me, hopefully by now, with. So I talk a lot about accessibility and I try to bring in also how, the reality is if people can't use your website, they're leaving. And so you are losing revenue. You are dropping. I've managed to get a couple of case studies together actually showing that by adding the accessibility, we one dropped the amount of work that the company had to do just in terms of their own operations. And two, we increased their revenue coming in. So it was a very good investment. But yes, a lot of people are now coming to me asking specifically about the accessibility, asking me to be the person who's going to handle the accessibility for their new builds or handle things for that. Before I really got into accessibility, I just kind of started working it in on a lot of websites. I wasn't necessarily telling the clients how much I was doing with it and how much I was just kind of making the whole thing work. So I mostly focused on the fact that I was going to make a website that worked for humans. And I just talked about lots of different types of humans and when was the last time you sprained your wrist or had a problem, you went to the eye doctor and you got your eyes dilated. I remember when that happened and I'm like, I cannot see my computer screen at all. I just can't read this thing. And I was like zooming way in. I'm like, oh, I can kind of see it now. And I remember seeing a group that I know had put out a banner and it had all outlined text. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is the most horrible thing ever. Just, and just kind of trying to bring in real world this kind of thing has actually happened to me, this kind of thing has happened to my friends, so that they can really tie it into actual humans. I think I answered your question in there.
I think so. So John posted a really interesting question in the chat. He asked, do we think accessibility is driven more by compliance directives or market opportunities? Do
I would
either of you have an opinion on that?
I would say it's a bit of both. I've had customers who come to me because they've say we have literally have all of these customer complaints saying that our checkout is too hard to use. And they're like literally just they're like, I know I am literally losing money on my checkout experience. Can you just fix it all and make it better? And yes, we have fixed it and improved it greatly, and the customer service complaints have just dropped significantly. And I also have people coming and saying, hey, I heard at my business networking thing that this person was sued under an ADA. I can't handle a $15,000 lawsuit. What can you do to help me?
Yeah, which that's more of like compliance than marketing opportunities, right? I feel like in what I've seen a lot, it tends to be more compliance driven, unfortunately. I wish that I could say people are coming. Every once in a while, we have someone who's like, we just feel like this is the right thing to do. They tend to be nonprofit organizations. But a lot of times businesses, or we've had a couple B Corps where they said that, which is a benefit corporation for anyone who's here, not in the US that doesn't know, which is for profit, but trying to do good for the world. But I feel like mostly what we hear is fear of lawsuits or fines, or just like, even if it's not fear, it's just, hey, we know that we're not in compliance with regulations, or there's a new law coming up in the case of European businesses or organizations, and we need to get in compliance. So that's what I've been seeing. I don't know, Scott or Ron, have you seen anything different on
It's
the
the same
marketing
for
versus
us too.
compliance?
It's all about not getting caught, so let's get compliant so we don't have an issue, but it's 100% for us been that way.
And I'd say it's more compliance rather than market opportunity from an education perspective, too. I think most business owners that we talk with haven't even heard of web accessibility. And so they don't understand that there's a market opportunity, to grow their client base by making their site accessible. So I think there's a lot of work to be done there to just educate business owners and website owners in general.
I'm going to skip around through some of our questions. Sorry, guys, but I feel like I'm feeling a theme here because I'm kind of curious, when we're talking about that and you're saying that there are a lot who haven't heard of it and maybe they have to get introduced, or Scott, you're saying, oh, they see it as a line item and now I have to explain it to them. Do we think there are certain client types that are more receptive to investing in accessibility? And if so, who are they? And I'm asking this question especially from the angle of there are probably some people who are attending right now who are thinking, I want to grow my accessibility business now, but I've been trying to sell it and I can't. And everybody's like, no, I'm not going to pay for that. And so, like, is there either a certain role or a certain size of business or a certain industry where we feel like if they were going to go out and try to market that more, because that's a side of their business they're interested in growing, that they might have more success? Jen, do you want to go first?
Yeah, so the group that I've found are the e-commerce people, the ones who are frustrated. They are having frustrations with their e-commerce website. And that's usually why they have come to me in the past for WordPress issues, is because they're just frustrated with their WordPress site. They're having all sorts of different various issues. They have customers calling and saying there are problems with the site, and they want the frustrations to go away. That's their end goal. And I've found that they are open to a lot of options for how do I make that frustration go away? Because they have a big, ugly problem that's right in front of them. And so they are like, you're going to give me a path to fix this problem? Okay, I'm on board. I will throw money at this because this has to go away.
Yeah, and I would say from my side, anything healthcare related, they're going to go down this path. It's almost like it's not an option. If you're going to have a healthcare related site, you have to go down this path. I mean, obviously you don't have to, but they are going to go down that path. So it's kind of a it's not a hard sell in that niche.
And for our client base, the government, government entities are very receptive. But including those, we have been contacted by agencies that never heard of accessibility until we explained it to them, and then they realize, oh, we better do this. But
Are
that's a
those more like the city, local, smaller agencies where they've never heard of it?
this was a state agency, but in a different
Oh,
state.
okay.
Yes. Outside of government, though, I would say not for us, not so much client-specific client types, but personality types. So, for example, it seems to me like of our clients who are commercial websites, not government websites, it's decision makers who want to be seen as leaders who do the right thing and who are actually trying to make the world a better place. They are more receptive, yeah, and they'll say yes fairly quickly.
And I think
So,
also there's the little market. So let's say you're a mom and pop and you have one tire store. You're not going to do this, but now you're a mom and pop that's grown to 30 tire stores. You're going to do this. It's the right thing to do. You realize it's the right thing to do. You've got 30 locations. It needs to happen now. But these little mom and pops, it's not really worth spinning your gears in that market when you've really got to go after somebody that's it's a concern. And I don't think it's really a concern or in their radar when they're that small of a business.
except for maybe in very specific instances where like their friend from the Chamber of Commerce got sued.
Yeah, or for us,
And
we
then
have.
suddenly they get, but I think you're right. I do think there's definitely a revenue threshold here where any business that makes under $100,000 a year, I could almost guarantee will probably not invest in
Yeah.
accessibility. And many of them will have very, very small website budgets to the effect that they might not.
Yeah.
But
I
Jen, I
think
mean, I know you serve the smaller business, and so I'd love for you to talk a little bit about that.
So I work with a lot of businesses that are under 100K a year, and the reality is they will take the small package. If you can offer them the small one-time package, they will take the small one-time package, and the reality is their website is not going to change very much. They really don't update their content very often. So I've been able to do one-day builds with them, and we just get the website done and it's over with. And quite frankly, it's going to work pretty well. So
I think
that's what I've found.
those are the kind of customers who probably don't even have a blog and they don't have any sort of ongoing marketing strategy, would be my guess. They have sort of like a four-page brochure website, in which case you
They
can
have
definitely
social
do.
media. That's where they spend all their time. So they spend all their time on social media, and then their website is primarily to give people the link of here's my services, here's what I do. I am in fact real. And so they found that their website is really important for being legitimate, to be viewed by other people as legitimate, but they spend almost all of their time on social media. But if people don't have a website to click off to and see stuff, they aren't viewed as legitimate. So that's what their website is for. They want it, but they really don't make changes to it very often, maybe once a year. And if you can just get it done in that one day, then they are really happy because it's over with, it's done with. They can move on with their life. And then they're like, okay, great. Now, frequently, what happens is they stop getting complaints about their website.
Yeah, so it definitely depends a little bit on how you structure your packages, I think, but it doesn't mean that those people necessarily won't buy if you have the right package for them. It sounds like that's what you're saying, right?
Yes. And they have to have this. If you want to go after the small clients, you have to have the small package.
Yeah. So James said something sort of interesting in the chat. James says, I work with nonprofits and they understand the ramifications if they decline on the option with accessibility. Unfortunately, they also don't have the budget. Design and functionality get set aside so that they are compliant. They may not get grants from the government if they don't abide by the rules. And that kind of led me a little bit to think about, the opposite of who is receptive to kind of like, okay, now we have some people who are not as receptive. And, during sales conversations, there might be objectives that come up. And so I'm curious if you could each share some thoughts about how you handle client objections, like that it's not in our budget. We're a very small, we're a nonprofit or we're have very low margins or whatever. How do you handle that? Ron, do you want to go first?
Sure. So on the budget side of things, sometimes, right, that's not uncommon for people to say that it's not on their budget. So we can ask some questions about, well, how about planning ahead for it? Would it be possible for them to budget it in next year? And then if they do say yes to that, then maybe there's something we can do this year to make a step in the right direction and then budget for the bigger piece later. So I think that's one option. I'll pass the baton to whoever else would like to answer next.
I think, for us, it happens when already an existing site, we're not doing a brand new build and they're looking to cut some costs. And we might, I'll basically explain, this is not a have to, but we definitely, we strongly recommend you do this. If they don't and they still pass on it, we figure out a way to work it into their marketing plan because we reissue marketing plans every 6 months to make sure we're still on task with what Google wants to see, et cetera, et cetera. We'll figure out a way to work it in down the road because we feel so strongly about it. And then we explain when it happens. We've built the cost of doing this for you into your next marketing plan and we get it done.
So that I think is a really great transition too. I wanted to talk about recurring accessibility services because up until now we've mostly been talking about a new build. I imagine each of you have some sort of recurring accessibility remediation or monitoring that you do. Could you talk a little bit about what those packages are like and how they're set up? Jen, do you want to go first?
So we have a couple different packages. We have some small scope monitoring, which we keep in the sub 100 range because it's literally very simple monitoring of a small subset of your pages with automation. This is not robust. It's simple. And then we have for a lot of places, like let's say your local library is a good one for this example. They probably walked in saying we don't even have a budget. And they're like, we don't know. We have to show our board something. And so usually what they have is they need to show their board progress. So normally for that, it's going to be a monthly retainer, something in the $300 to $1,000 a month range is something that they can fit into their budget. And with that, you can show a little progress, each month you can show a little bit happened depending upon where they fall. But, even an hour a month, like, okay, this month we fixed their main menu. Their main menu now works well. It's now easy to use main menu. This month we fixed their footer. We can now use their footer with the keyboard. We next month we did some theme fixes and we got some stuff in and you just chip away at it slowly, but they're able to show their board something is happening. And a lot of times when they don't have a budget, what they need is they mean we can pay small amounts monthly, but we don't have a chunk to give you.
I can speak to that. So yes, we offer monthly accessibility plans, as we call them, MAPs, MAP MAPs. And so for these are really a great fit for websites, WordPress websites that are not accessible. We spend a specific amount of time each month doing both auditing and remediation. And we did base these plans off of Amber's company, Equalize Digital, has these types of plans, and it just seemed brilliant to me. And she gave us permission to do something similar. So we did. So the plan here is, yeah, go ahead, go for it.
I'll just chime in. Maybe Paula can find the link. I gave a whole meetup presentation about how
Yes.
we run these because I would love more people to do it. You are allowed to copy me. You can go look at what the pricing tiers are. Like, we literally, because people can buy them off our website. You can go see, obviously, you need to set it up as it works for your business. But I'm just saying that. Ron asked, anybody can do it. It's not special. Just, but go on, Ron.
Thanks. Thanks. No, that's great. I mean, I appreciate what you're doing with it because that's the whole goal, right? Is to have more agencies offering more opportunities to make more sites accessible. So I think this is a really key piece. So the idea with a map is each month some time is spent on auditing and some on remediation. And we have different levels of plans. The only difference is the amount of time each month. And at the beginning, we're going to focus on the lowest hanging fruit for the biggest impact. So main navigation, header and footer. Those things are present on every page of the site. So those might be the first month or two or three of the effort. And then after that, we've identified, of course, many other issues, and we'll just keep working our way through them in a prioritized fashion. So you can make a lot of progress quickly, like Jen was saying, even and right with just a little bit of effort, you can make a lot of progress quickly. And then over time, make the site more and more accessible. So that's a great fit for clients who aren't ready to redesign this year, or maybe even in the next several years. But they want to make their site more accessible. This is a great approach to that.
And for us, we build it into the marketing plan. So it's these are the five things we're doing, even in our most basic marketing plan, and the ongoing compliance is one of them. So, and the way that I explain it to people is, we can make your site compliant as of today, but next month you're going to add a blog, you might add a new procedure page, you're doing something, and those new additions have to become compliant. So that's why we're doing these monthly scans every month. And people understand, it's this living thing that's always changing, and we've got to make sure that we're changing with it.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, Scott, because that's a really important part is once a site is made accessible, right? Keeping an eye on it and helping maintain that accessibility. As we all know, it's an ongoing process. So we do the same once we've built a new website to be accessible, then same thing. We offer an unpublished version of the map, if you will. That's a lower cost because it takes less effort. And we do some auditing and remediation either monthly or quarterly to help our client keep the website accessible.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes along the lines of like we do monthly speed and security updates. WordPress plugins are getting updated, software's getting updated. The
Exactly.
slightest little thing can break the site, so we need to go in on a monthly basis and make sure everything's working well.
So something that we always talk about with this is the challenge that we have sometimes, at least initially, of communicating during the sales process about how long it will take. And I'll say right now, I'm not the person who does our sales. My partner Chris does all of our sales, so he has all these conversations. But I know one of the things that he's been talking about is kind of like, well, there's going to be a minimum upfront investment, but we very frequently will say this is always just an estimate. Once we actually get in and we're auditing your website, like it could change. And the biggest thing is we will always communicate that to you. And so that's something that's really important. Because, fixing their nav menu could be simple. It could also be, no, we're going to recode your entire nav menu because you use a custom theme, or it was built with this, some plugin that was really bad, like Mega Menu plugin that doesn't support anything. And it's just like, eh, it's easier to start over. But at the same time, depending upon what tier they're on, because we do ours based on a number of hours, well, okay. Now there might not be enough time in 1 month to do that because that fix ended up being so big. But I don't know if any of you have any thoughts about how you communicate that kind of stuff during the sales process to clients about these recurring plans that, we can give you a picture, but it's possible once we get in, just like the plumber, right? If he opens the wall and finds a whole bunch of mold, well, surprise. I don't, do you have anything like that that helps you with communicating during sales about expectations?
We kind of have a set idea of how long it's going to take, and if there's a range in there, so we build that into the initial price. But obviously, if the site is three times the size of your average site you're working on, it's going to take more time. So there's times that we've gone back and said, look, you've got a gigantic site, it's going to cost more. There's been times where, it unexpectedly took more time and we just ate the time because it's the right thing to do. Ultimately for us, it's getting our client onto this ongoing marketing plan and that monthly nut that's coming in, and that's what we want. So if we have to eat a little bit to make it right, we'll do that because it's more important that we get the site compliant, get them on the marketing plan, and then we can continue to do things. And again, like you guys have both mentioned, sometimes you'll only do a little bit this month and you're going to finish it up the next month when you've got more time built. But there's been more than one time where we've just, we did an estimate or we ran into an issue midway and we just ate it to get it done.
I think we've probably all been
Yeah.
there. Jen, you were starting to say something. How do you
Yeah,
handle
so
expectations?
I normally just give them, okay, it's this much a month, and we estimate that it's going to take between whatever, 4 and 7 months to get you to the point that you want to be at. And when we hit the 4 month point, we're going to do a check-in and say, okay, here's where we're at, here's what we've done, and we're going to give you a more specific estimate of what we think is left. And then usually I give them a couple of options because people love options. And you have some people who are like, I want it done completely. And you have some people who are like, I want the less expensive one, even if it's not complete. And so I usually will say we've got, these issues left, and I will try to kind of rate and prioritize them because some issues are, it's mildly annoying, but people can still get past it. And other issues are, no, I literally cannot check out. So, there's different types of issues. So I usually give them the two choices and they get to choose which one. So it makes them feel like they're still in control. And then, of course, I always bring up the story of remodeling my kitchen when the contractor pulled up the flooring and yes, there was mold. And then they ripped out
You've been
that
there.
layer. And then they found a whole laminate floor layer, which had some issues. So they ripped that out. And then they found the linoleum underneath that, and they ripped that out. And then we finally got down to clean, decent plywood. So I just kind
I
of
kind
share
of
my
feel
own
like
personal struggle.
we can all thank HGTV for creating analogies that everyone will understand. Right. Ron, how about you? How do you handle those expectations?
Yeah, well, I think managing expectations, right, is one of our most important jobs in the business that we are all in. And Jen, you just described that so well that you just don't know sometimes. So just managing those expectations as well as you can up front and then updating them regularly is just by far the most important thing to keeping that client knowing what's going on. And for us, we have found that those monthly accessibility plans are very successful, and that, like Jen, as you said, people love options. And part of that is, right, that gives them some agency, some control over the process, which often there isn't, maybe in web design and development as much. But in this case, there is because they see the progress each month. They're getting a report, and we're talking with them each month. And then they can stop. They don't have to go all the way to conformance. They can stop early. So I think that flexibility and them having that ability to turn it off when they're ready, is also very helpful in this particular approach.
I want to jump over to some of our questions that are in the Q&A panel. So Dylan said, I sometimes have potential clients who say their website is, quote, accessible, but they have only installed an accessibility overlay plugin. What is your take on these overlay plugins? Dylan says it takes time to convince clients to understand why they need to spend money to build the website properly for accessibility.
I guess I can tackle that one. So, if they're over in Europe, I always bring up the European Union statement where they just come right out and they say overlays do not make your website accessible and they do not meet European laws. So, I love to bring out that one. And even when they're not in Europe, I still love to bring out that one because the European Union isn't exactly a small place. So when you have something really big as an entity that that says that. It's really helpful. And of course, you can bring up the recent FTC thing with Accessibe, where the FTC just said that Accessibe, I don't remember the exact terminology they used, but basically they said they had been using false claims regarding being able to make any website WCAG compliant.
And they
Something
fine
similar
them
to
a
that.
million dollars.
Yes, but there are, I think, recurring fines if they continue to make false claims. That's what they do in a lot of their setups, is they add on fines if you keep violating it.
So we'll explain some detail about the work involved in making a website accessible if we're doing it, from the foundation up, that there, I don't know that I use the words, we use semantic HTML on a regular basis with a prospect or a client, but we do talk about that the coding structure is really important in doing semantic HTML. It's one of the crucial things that allows the assistive technologies to interact with your website and understand it and make it work the way it needs to work. And that an overlay is a way, like it's kind of a band-aid to fix some of those things, but it doesn't fix it. It still never fixes the core issues. So that's helpful. And then there's that overlayfactsheet.com, I believe it is. Amber, is that the right URL? Yeah, there's a lot of good information there. And then there was another WordPress accessibility meetup with the attorney from North Texas. I forget his name. That was a very good meetup. Do you recall the his name, Amber?
Yeah, we can get the link for that meetup. He also was on our podcast because he defends. It's interesting because we've had attorneys before that are on the side of like Lainey Feingold advocates for accessibility and I think sues entities. But Richard Hunt is on the other side where he defends businesses, but he still was like, you need to make your website accessible if you don't want to get sued. That's what he
Right.
said.
And
But
in
it's
that,
really interesting to hear his take from that other side.
yeah, it is, because he pointed out some percentage of lawsuits against websites for them not being accessible. Some portion of those was because they were using an overlay, which made the website less accessible. So there's more info on
Yeah,
that.
I think
Let me know.
last year it was about 30% of websites have that. I think there are law firms that are targeting websites with accessibility overlays on them. And there are reports like UsableNet has a good report on accessibility lawsuits that you can share with your customers that might help them. I'll say we've had a couple come to us that already had overlays. And they had gotten sued. But one of the questions that they ask is, well, should we just leave the overlay on while you are fixing things or until you get it to a certain point? And usually what I'll do is we'll copy their site to staging and we'll turn off the overlay on staging, and then we'll compare and do a manual audit of the live website with the overlay and a manual audit of the live website without the overlay. And then usually we can be like, we'll see all these same problems exist anyway. And then they're like, oh, okay. And I'm like, you can save yourself at a baseline $49 a month, but some of these organizations are paying thousands of dollars a year to the overlay because it's based on page views. So usually that's how we can convince them that I'm like, it's you've been sued. And it still has these problems. It's you're wasting your money. So, have you experienced this, Scott? Or the overlay question? Not really.
No, and our clients that come to us have no idea what that would even be. So, and as I said, we build it into the plan. We don't really talk about it. It's on there, but they're not looking at that. But we build it into the plan and then explain if they ask. But it's just not. It's an easy sell for us, because of the industry that we're the niche that we work in. It's an easy sell, and it's not really a happen where somebody wants to fight us on it.
So what you're saying is we all just need to get into medical marketing.
No, wouldn't recommend that either. No.
Yeah, you have to worry about HIPAA. The rest of us are like,
I
no
know.
thanks.
Don't get me started on that one.
There's one other angle on the overlay thing that I wanted to mention because I got surprised by a prospect one time, and so I thought hard about how to explain this better the next time. So if when people need to use a screen reader software, right, they use that screen reader software for all the functions of their computer, not just visiting websites, right? They're going to open other documents, they're going to open other applications, they're also going to browse websites, they're going to do email, all with this screen reader software. So they need to be able to navigate every website on the internet with that software. So if you think you're special and you put your one little overlay on your one website and that overlay has, you know, 0.1% market share globally, you know, do you really expect someone who needs assistance to learn your one tool for your one website when they're already using a tool that they know so well? That's what you want to build to.
Yeah, I like that.
And I like to it's very common that on these overlays, they don't work almost uniformly, very reliable on carousels. A lot of them have an animated carousel that's going through, and if you open the widget and find the spot to turn off the animations, which is always a challenge. So I literally have a prospect go try and open up the overlay, figure out how to turn off animations, and it like they're like it took me an entire minute to do that, and then try and use the carousel. Now the carousel's broken and literally you can't page through it anymore. It's I found that happens on quite a few websites. And the other thing is I have a couple of websites that I know are using a specific overlay, and I know that it breaks their main menu completely with the keyboard. So I'll have someone try and use it on their machine, and then I have the Accessi Bye-Bye browser extension installed. It's a great browser extension, the Accessi Bye-Bye, but it blocks most of the overlays. And so you can turn the Accessi Bye-Bye on and then show that the main menu actually works without the overlay. And that's usually a big sale. They're like, oh, wow. Okay.
Let's see. I'm going to try to get through a few of these kind of quickly. MJ said, I'm a new hire WordPress developer for a nonprofit. My company is very complex. WordPress site is not accessible at all. Images don't even have alt text. They're interested in being accessible, but don't want to spend money. Do you have any suggestions for free or low-cost tools I can use to help audit the site? So do you each want to talk about some of the low-cost or free tools that you use? Scott, do you want to go first?
We don't, and you know, this is not a it's we don't present it as an option. You know, this is what we're doing for you, and this is, you know, it this is why we're doing it. And for me, and it's taken a long time for me to get here, and you guys can probably all relate, but eventually you get to this point where sometimes clients aren't a good fit for you, you know, and that's just a hard truth that you have to come by. In the beginning, you want to grow your business. Every client, I want every client I can get. I can only pay $100. I'll take it. But then you get to this point where it's like, you know what? I don't think we're right for you. And if a client comes and is fighting us on everything that we know is the right thing to do, it's not a good fit for Sector 45. So just like there's a, you know, we might not be a good fit for them. We have this really interesting thing, and we've gotten a lot of compliments on it, but we have on our website, it's called our breakup promise. And it basically says, if you or us decide that we're not a good fit, here are all the ways that we're going to work with you to make sure that you have a seamless transition to your next vendor. And people appreciate it so much. But it comes back to the bottom line is sometimes we're not a good fit. And when somebody doesn't have the money to do something well, you know, that's not how we work. So
So,
we
what
don't
tools
really
are
have.
you using
What tools are we using for
for finding accessibility problems on websites?
yours?
Yeah, Accessibility Checker. Do you use
Yeah.
any browser extensions?
You know, the team's got some stuff they use. I can't offhand remember what it is they're using, but they do. But you know, your tool is our Bible.
Well, thank you. And we do have a free version. Ron, do you want to go?
Yes. Yeah. For WordPress sites, the free version of Accessibility Checker is great for a free tool. Definitely recommend that. If it's not WordPress, then Wave works on every website, and that's free. And then for keyboard testing, anybody can do that. And there's links to the Web AIM keyboard testing guide, which is not that complex. So anyone can really train themselves to do that. And then on the screen reader side, more complex to learn, but NVDA is free on the PC. And then Macs come with VoiceOver built in, and Android phones come with TalkBack built in. So those are all learnable. And Equalize Digital has now some wonderful brand new courses on learning how to use VoiceOver available now, and NVDA coming very shortly.
Thank you, Ron. Jen, what tools do you use for checking websites?
So usually my first chat with a client is I do two scores. The first score is going to be the risk score, and the second score is going to be the lightning audit, because those are both, I mean, it takes me about 2 minutes to do both of them. So that just gives me a good, bad, ugly kind of situation.
And
And
these are
then from
your
there,
own tools that you've developed. They're not,
yeah. So
right?
I can toss the links to them in the chat if you'd like, because they're very quick and easy. Most people can learn them in just a few minutes, but they're good to just kind of rank things, and it also gives you a good place to start. Like, okay, clearly this issue came up at the very beginning, so let's focus on it and work on getting it to actually pass. And then
So
also
this
there's
kind
the quick audit presentation I did with the meetup. So
Yeah,
if
maybe Paula can find that link. And I think that kind of takes us to Hannah had asked if anyone offers an accessibility audit at the beginning of the relationship to get new clients. And I'm kind of wondering if that's asking like as a pre-sales, like has
that.
anybody gone out and been like, hey, I found these problems on your website. I can help you fix it. Have any of you done that?
No.
I do the profile with new clients, and it's what I teach when I work with agencies. I teach them to do this with their existing clients and also with their new clients, just so that they can get a something that even a VA can do pretty quickly and just profile them.
It sounded like you both said no. I'll say I know for a while, a long time ago, Chris tried sometimes doing some of that cold outreach and it never was very good. But generally, as part of our sales process, he does, it's not a comprehensive audit by an accessibility professional, but he'll do some of the things you're talking about, Jen or Ron, that you mentioned, like can he tab through? Can he like to get a picture as part of the sales process, and in conversations, he'll say, hey, I noticed these things don't work, that kind of thing.
It's
So
a tough sell to do it that way. I mean, it's like I have a web agency and I build websites for a living. You know how many emails I get telling me my website's broken and only this company can fix it? Did you even look at my site and what I do? So people are so inundated with these kind of it's broken and you need to hire me, they just ignore or delete.
so you're probably going to waste a lot of your time if you try to put marketing effort into that kind of cold outreach.
You know, I think that if you have a niche, like we have a niche, and we decided that this was important, and we talked to all of our clients because our clients trust us. So when we say we recommend to do this, it's not a hard sell for us because we already have that trust factor. But to do it as a cold outreach, that's tough.
For sure. Someone asked, how do you handle clients who do not see the value in accessibility? And I know we sort of talked about this a little bit, but do you have anything else? I know we talked about budget, but are there any other objections or ways that you can communicate value?
I basically say you don't have to do this. We strongly recommend, and here's why. And I use the examples like the big boxes getting sued. You know, nobody wants to have a lawsuit. And then I drop it and we circle back. We always circle back if they say no. And I'm only talking about, you know, 1 to 2% say no. But if they do, we always circle back. And but I make sure I leave it with, we don't have to do this, but we really strongly recommend, and here's why, and then drop it.
And we'll talk about that. The things you do for accessibility help everybody, not just people who are currently using assistive technologies. And it also impacts, you know, metrics on the back end as well, right? So if the website's easier to use, you're generally going to attract more traffic. you can have more, a higher conversion rate is not uncommon, and it helps SEO as well. So there are many side benefits, if you will, to it that might be appealing to a regular business, even if they are, for whatever reason, not into accessibility, that it's still going to help them gain more customers and a better conversion rate.
Let's see. So I think we have a couple of questions maybe related to packaging. So Hannah said we have a website maintenance package that all of their websites are part of. We're trying to decide if we should wrap a regular accessibility audits into the maintenance package or have a separate program. It sounds like Jen offers it separately, but Scott wraps it in. Are there any pros and cons to those two different approaches?
The biggest con to wrapping them together is just the fact that that tends to increase the cost of it quite a bit. I found generally people respond better when I give them tiers of pricing versus saying this is the package. Some people want the budget, some people want the platinum. That's just how it is. So, I mean, it really depends on how budget sensitive your customers are.
Yeah, and I think on the flip side for her is that when it's a separate line item and you have a separate line item for this and hosting and this, it's easy to say yes, no. And wrapping it in together is kind of easy. And there are some things in our plan that might not take as long as the other, so we can use that time with the accessibility. So this kind of package, we don't have to necessarily explain, well, this takes us exactly this much time. This takes us exactly this much time. We're just going to do all of these things for you for this cost, and it works well for us.
Yeah, I thought Jen and Scott answered that great. I don't have anything more to add.
Okay. So, Ron, I actually think the next question is for you. It says, when you offer maps, how do you build scoping into the monthly plan? My reason for asking is that it is difficult to recommend a plan tier without doing scoping.
Yes, excellent question. So typically, we will talk to our prospect or client about how fast they want to improve the accessibility of the site. Is there a deadline that they are trying to reach, either for their own reason or some, legal reason? Then they might want a larger package to go faster, and we'll do more auditing in that first month. In fact, usually the first month is mostly auditing on those kind of things to get a sense of, that's giving us then the scope of what's needed. And it's okay, we can have someone change the package level if we discover that they want, there's more issues than we thought or fewer issues than we thought. We can be flexible with that. And I don't know if you have more to add, Amber, since you have, the same kind of plans.
So I think usually it is deadline based, and I as I said, I'm at a slight disadvantage because I don't do all of our sales conversations. Sometimes Chris will have myself or Steve take a look at a website before they close on a specific plan tier, because depending upon how it's built can dramatically impact things. If we know it's built with a certain page builder or something like that. And also because sometimes they come to us with questions of like, can we remediate it or should we just rebuild it? Which is a whole nother topic we could talk about for an hour. And Steve and I just presented on that. So I would say if you're interested in that, you should go watch that talk. But we have minimum months on each plan tier because we say, one, it helps us plan out to be able to forecast, excuse me, and know for a certain amount of time and we're going to have it. But also, it's a greater number of months at the smaller level because we're like, if you're buying this, you want to get accessible. It's going to take longer at a smaller tier. But that said, we are flexible and we had someone come in recently at a 48-hour a month, and they just realized that they wanted to have a lot more oversight on everything. They're hosted on Pantheon with a multi-dev. Like, they're really worried about pushing live to production. So they wanted to check everything, but then they realized, oh, but also my day-to-day job is not just checking developer work. And so they were like, the speed at which we were working didn't match the speed at which they were available. And so we were like, okay, well, we'll be flexible and we'll drop you to a lower tier and we'll just do things slower because that's what you need. And we've also had people come in where they had a deadline with the Department of Education or with a state funding entity. And they had to be by a certain time. And initially, we looked at it and we're like, it's going to be like, let's say, 6 months at 24 hours. And we get in and we do 1 or 2 months of that. And we're like, okay, you need to be accessible in X number of months. We can tell now this is definitely not going to happen. You have to go up. And like, this is your choice. You meet your deadline or not, because this is the reality of what we've discovered once we got in. And generally, in those scenarios, usually it's odd. Like, they can't always find a lot of money for new websites or whatever, but they can find money when they're about to be in really big trouble with the Department of Education. So usually those ones are almost, I don't want to say, like, it sounds bad to say like a blank check, but they're almost like if you go to them and say, no, this is a reality, and if you want to be it, then they usually will go up. So.
And you bring up a good point, Amber. We were just talking, all four of us, about how to do some quick testing on websites, right, to analyze them. And so we do what you're talking about, Amber, which is figuring out what theme they're using, because that's a big factor. And then, we could do some keyboard testing. And Google Lighthouse is another free, not very comprehensive way, but it is an automated way to get an answer in a few seconds of, where's the general accessibility level? Is it in the, close to 100, or is it down in the 20% level? So you can get some quick sense of things up front of, is this really a train wreck, or is this not too bad and just needs a tune-up?
Let's see. So Marsha had an interesting question, which says, I recently was doing an audit for a nonprofit and they had built their site with a GUI tool, GUI. There's no way to make it accessible without buying a more expensive version of that builder product. I'm in the position to have to log bugs with the vendor who created the tool. Have you ever had to go down this path? And what has been your experience?
I think for us, it's been more, it's not just accessibility related. It's been the entire site, is a train wreck once you get in there and see it. And you say, look, we have to rebuild this. Or, it might be some other situation where, they were switching vendors and the vendors, keeping their code or something, messy like that. But it's never really been a situation about accessibility for us. But really, it's the entire, once you get in, you're like, oh my God. What did they do? And you basically have to tell them, you've got to rebuild your site. But it looks fine on the outside. Well, on the outside it does, but not on the inside. So
You know,
I
I'll add on that. We do a lot of times when we have people come in on our lowest tier, or even like, 12 hours a month or less, it can sometimes be really hard to fix major things. And so a big part of our strategy on that is that when we identify problems that exist in the theme or the plugins, we first report them to the theme or the plugin developer. Instead of us trying to fix them on that website, one, because it puts the burden on the theme or the plugin developer and takes away from time we have to spend, which then makes it less expensive for our client. And also, so then there's like three reasons why you do this. So there's that, the budget piece. Two, it means that if they fix it for everyone using their plugin or theme. So that, I mean, is the biggest impact on the world that is great, right? And then three, if they fix it is a guarantee, not a guaranteed, but much closer to a guaranteed long-term fix. Because you patch something with JavaScript or a PHP filter or something like that, and then they release an update and they change a class name or anything like that, now your fix won't work. And so, to some degree, if you're patching stuff and creating almost like your own overlay, which is sometimes what you're doing, then you get in a land of every time a update for that plugin is released, you got to check first before you can release it on their live site to make sure your fix still works. So it's a lot of ongoing overhead. So I would say no matter what, I would try to report stuff to that vendor. That said, in our experience, some are better than others. And sometimes what happens is we report it and it sits too long and it doesn't match the timeline. And then there's a decision point of either we do it, go ahead and patch it, or we remove it and we go with a different solution. So
I think that's super smart.
Let's see. I want to see, right? Oh, this is sort of an interesting question. Someone said, when a client declines accessibility for their website, do you have them sign off that they are declining accessibility? The second part of this question is, does a sign off protect you from a lawsuit? And we're not going to answer that because none of us are attorneys, so we can't tell you whether that would protect you from a lawsuit. But does anybody have this in their practice where you have sort of like an accessibility waiver? Like, I told you about this and you declined?
No.
I do have an accessibility waiver where they can sign, and it's pretty darn terrifying, actually. So
we do the same. We do have if we're a little nervous about that client, then we do have a clause they can sign that they have declined to do the accessibility work.
Yeah. The thing that we have done, and I'll be fully transparent, we don't build new websites anymore. Last year we stopped building new websites just because we like the auditing stuff better. but when we were doing that, a big thing that we would sometimes do is a change of scope, because we were writing in our contracts that certain components would be fully WCAG conformant. Never the entire website, but like the header, the footer, the sidebars, a page we built, whatever. So it was like in our statement of work that we had to deliver that. So if they would say, this happened, I really want this one color in this one section to match my failing contrast logo, because it kind of looks just like my logo, the way the designer styled it with a box around it and it's light blue background and white text. And I'm like, it's going to fail contrast. No, I really want it just in this one spot. And so we're like, okay, you're going to sign a change of scope that you agree that the header of the homepage is no longer going to be 100% WCAG conformant. It's a scope change, right? Like, because otherwise they could come back and be like, well, you didn't deliver on what you said. So we would do that. It wasn't necessarily like a we waive you from being liable kind of thing, but it was more like we have in writing now that they very clearly said they're releasing us from that obligation to deliver that piece for that section of the website. So let's see. There's a couple of questions related to accessibility and Divi, which I know Paula also put a link in the chat about that. And I know we only have a few minutes, so I don't know if we can go too far down on this, but I am curious for you all to maybe say what you build with. Ron, I know you said you use a custom theme. Scott, Jen, are you using all custom stuff? Do you have a builder of choice?
So we're 100% WordPress, and up until recently, most of our stuff's been with WP Bakery, which we've been pretty happy with. But lately we've been testing out using Oxygen, which has been much quicker build times and been pretty nice so far. It's got a little bit of a learning curve if you haven't poked around in it. But once you do, it works out pretty well. But yeah, that's basically what we build with.
So I use my custom theme, which is Kaya, which is available on GitHub. And it's specifically designed for accessibility. I get it tested, kind of a nice little arrangement with the Blind Golf Canada. They make sure to do some regular testing in exchange for a little bit of dev work from me. So that's great, because they have their entire membership is blind. So we get a lot of good testing mm-hmm. from them. So that's awesome. That's how I make sure that stays accessible. And then for the builder, I either use a very simple block pack and specific elements from it and only those elements, or I use Elementor and again, specific elements and only those elements. and only with certain configurations. So it's very restricted as to what gets used.
And for us on the block side of things, so for content, we're developing blocks, but we use the Cadence system. We just use the accessible blocks of theirs. And then we do use the native Gutenberg blocks that are accessible for, paragraphs and headings and things. And then if those don't completely meet the need, then we'll build a custom block that's accessible to meet the need. But you can get very far with Cadence and the accessible Gutenberg blocks.
So I want to wrap up with our last question. And what I'd like to ask each of you, if you have any advice for agency owners or freelancers who want to start doing accessibility work but aren't sure how to incorporate it or get started. Like your elevator pitch of advice. Oh, Ron's going to volunteer to go first.
I gave some thought to this, and I would say one of the things I've learned that I recommend is write simple scopes of work, so they're just very easy to understand and just clearly point out what is included and what is not included. And so, Amber, you gave a great example of how, you were delivering certain components that were WCAG compliant, but that was what you were committed to. That's a great way to do it. But we have found that goes a long way for the client to understand things.
I think that both Jen and Ron, you guys gave really good examples of how you make the client kind of think about it. Well, what kind of phone do you use? What kind of browser are you on? You're walking through this path and you're telling this story. And when you start telling that story, it's very easy for us to say, well, I don't have these problems and this is the way I think, so everyone must think this way. Well, what if somebody can't hear or can't see or whatever that problem is, and people don't stop to think about it and they don't understand the percentages. So when you start talking and use the data and tell a story, that's really how you're going to sell it.
And then at Easy Alley Guide, we have the Accessibility Partner Program, which you can sign up for free. And we have some templates to help get you started, to help you sell it to your clients, with, of course, the idea that you then white label the work through us. But it helps a lot of agencies kind of put their toe in the water by handling more of the sales part of the process, and then not doing all the fulfillment, and then they can kind of start to slowly bring some of the fulfillment in-house and start to get their people trained on things kind of over time without having to dive into the deep end all the way. You can kind of grab the kickboard and the armbands and whatnot to go in the pool.
Yeah. So, oh yeah, go ahead, Ron.
Yes, and my last piece was work out effective ways to explain things and practice those explanations, because you'll get the same tricky questions from clients over and over, and it's worth spending some time to sort that out. Like explaining why you can't guarantee a conformant website will stay that way past the moment that you allow them access to the back end. Being able to explain that easily is very valuable, and many other things as well.
Yeah, sometimes just having confidence in your sales conversations is like key, because
Yeah.
that gives them, that helps build the trust, because they're like, okay, they know. If you sound kind of nervous, then they're going to be like, does he actually know what he's talking about? Right. Yeah. I'd say, my thought on this is I do think it's definitely worth investing in just spending some time working on your starter, whatever that is. And testing that, because that will allow you to start from a more accessible place. And then I just like increase your price a tiny bit. We're always afraid to do that, I think, sometimes, but try as an experiment. Like, what happens if I charge 1,000 extra, or 2,000 or 5,000, whatever that increment that makes sense for you, right? And you might be surprised that they'll just sign right off on it. And then you're like, oh, okay. So maybe that would give you that, space to do a little bit more accessibility work on that project. And then you do it again on the next project, right? And kind of build it in. So I'd love to give each of you a chance to just say where people can follow up with you if they want to learn more about your businesses or have additional questions. Maybe you could give your web address and your top social media wherever that might be. And maybe we could go in the same order that we introduced, which I think was Ron, Jen, and Scott.
Sure. Our website is codegeek.net, and the best social platform is LinkedIn for us. I'll put my personal LinkedIn profile and I'll paste our company page too.
And for me, Jen Harries, the website is easyalleyguide.com, and LinkedIn is also a good place to find me, or the accessibility group on Facebook.
And for me, the best way is on our website, sector45.com. And you can reach out and be the contact form. It comes straight to me.
Well, thank you all so much. I really enjoyed having you here, and you all shared such great information. So thank you, and thank you everybody for your wonderful questions.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizedigital.com.